Hey, Jared from Doom Rocket here. Just a heads up, this episode of Casual Wednesdays comes with a spoiler warning. If you haven't seen Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman yet, then you have no business listening to a podcast right now. Stop what you're doing and get your beautiful tuchus over to the nearest theater and soak in one of the better superhero films of the past couple of years, okay? Okay. All right, here we go. 2017 is probably the biggest year for superhero movies yet. I know it feels like we say that every year, but look at the lineup. Not just of what we've already seen, but what still lies ahead. Logan, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, Justice League, and now finally, there exists a Wonder Woman movie. And I'm happy to report, to the few remaining people out there who have yet to see it, it is good. And you don't have to take my word for it. Hell, as a guy, I would prefer it if you didn't just take my word for it. Stephanie Zacharick of Time said, quote, Wonder Woman is a cut above nearly all the superhero movies that have been trotted out over the past few summers. Lindsay Barr of the Associated Press said, quote, like the heroine at its center, Wonder Woman, the movie rises with powerful grace above the noise. It's not perfect, but it's often good, sometimes great, and exceptionally rewatchable. And for the sake of a shameless plug, Molly Jane Kramer said in the Doom Rocket review, quote, the ideal to strive towards, the moral compass advertised in Man of Steel, seems to have been found in the thrilling and heartfelt Wonder Woman. Illuminated by dawn's light in the film's final moments, we finally get to join her in the sun. It's easy to feel that superhero movies have somehow turned a corner, at least in terms of maturity. Logan bid farewell to one of the most macho super tough guys around by giving us one of the most affecting superhero pictures ever made. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 went deep into the recesses of its heroes' respective ids, a lot of the time at the expense of its own spectacle, and now with Wonder Woman we have something that feels vital and new, even though it definitely shouldn't. A female-centric superhero movie treated with reverence and respect. And while Wonder Woman is enjoying the best reviews of any DC Comics movie since The Dark Knight, there are most certainly some things we here at Doom Rocket took issue with. Nothing monumental, nothing deal-breaking, just, you know, stuff. So that's what we're gonna talk about. Wonder Woman, the good, the not so good, and what's next for our favorite Amazon. This week, oh my god, you guys, Wonder Woman. Then we'll share our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week and assess Batman number 24 and Doctor Strange number 20. It's Wednesday, June 7th. Happy New Comic Book Day. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays. I am so happy Aquaman is not in this movie.
No Aquaman.
I don't care about the Poseidon parallels. No Aquaman means good Wonder Woman movie.
But at least we got to see Diana email Bruce.
Oh yeah, that's always fun.
It's thrilling.
Hello everyone. Thanks for listening. This is Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm Jared Jones, editor-in-chief of Doom Rocket, and with me, as always, is Doom Rocket associate editor, the Princess Diana to my Etta Candy, Molly Jane Kramer. Hello, MJ.
Hi, Jared.
So we're talking about Wonder Woman this week. We got to see it. You got to review it.
Heck yeah.
Which I'm very jealous about. We've only seen it the once yet, but we're probably going to fix that before long.
We better.
No, we're going to.
We better. I wasn't able to drag Jared a second time this weekend, but I will soon.
We're so busy. We have things.
We are.
There was other content, believe it or not, to consume this week.
So many TV shows to catch up on.
Absolutely. Yeah. But now that we have time to sit down and actually really parse our thoughts on it, I've been very deliberately keeping my mouth shut when talking to people about this movie. It's like, tell me what you really think. And I'm like, you can listen to my podcast, you know, because I feel like the only person I would really want to have this conversation with is you, because you were the only person whose opinion about this movie I was kind of hinging the success of it on.
Really?
It's the absolute truth. I'm not just saying that, even though you're looking at me with those big old eyes right now. But I don't know anyone who's a bigger Wonder Woman fan as you. I mean, I think you feel about Wonder Woman as I feel about Superman. Like, these characters are important to us. And I think what's equally important is that they are represented properly on the big screen.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty sure you walked away from that movie pretty happy.
I did. But like you said, a lot more people are going to see this incarnation of Diana mm-hmm. than are going to ever read her comics or any other media of her. Yeah, millions of people are going to see this. Millions of people probably have at this point, I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah, since it made over $200 million at the box office.
A tidy sum.
Yeah.
To say
the
least.
So it's very important that this version of Diana is good.
I mean, of all the movies that are coming out this year, and there are more than a few, the only movie that needed to be good, objectively good, not great, not, yeah, okay, but good.
Just good.
Was Wonder Woman.
It was important.
Yeah, 75 years of the most, one of the most popular and most recognizable characters on the planet, and she's never had a movie?
Never had a movie.
That's mystifying.
Well, there was that TV movie back in, what, 74?
That parlayed into the TV show, right?
Yeah.
Well, we don't.
I know.
I mean, did we talk about the Doctor Strange TV movie when we did that? No, we didn't do that. People have said to me, it's like, well, actually, I love dudes anymore, actually. But they're telling me that Justice League is actually the movie that DC's hinging its future successes on. I'm like, that's bullshit. Because what DC needs is an Iron Man. It needs a character to hinge all these movies on based in terms of, like, immediate popularity. And Wonder Woman is it. I am so pumped to say that. This character is probably going to prove to be as popular as Chris Hemsworth was as Thor when, you know, Thor, the first Thor came out.
Well, I think it's funny that you compare her to Iron Man because this movie... And her character mm-hmm. is a really great amalgamation of Captain America and Thor together.
And also Iron Man.
I think aspects of the film were a little bit like Iron Man, but she herself
sure.
is nothing like Tony. Absolutely I don't like Tony. Don't call her Tony.
Well, I'm not calling her Tony. All right, well, we already gave her a spoiler warning, so we're just going to dive right into a couple of things on our minds. But when I was watching Wonder Woman, particularly the ending, I felt that the Jeff Bridges Ironmonger third act obligatory fight sequence started to take place. And that's kind of what we had. Yeah. Although in Wonder Woman, the stakes are a little more substantial because we don't really know what Diana's truly capable of. We don't really know Diana's true origins. And the thing is, neither does she. She discovers all this stuff alongside us as the movie's unfolding. So as kind of ham-handed as David Thewlis and his weirdo mustache in a giant CGI suit. It was really bad.
Why in that flashback to his like being fallen back way back when? Why does it like this helmet melts off and you see his stupid mustache?
Well, because mustaches were in vogue back in ancient times.
No, they weren't.
Sure,
it's awful. But she should have just either had a beard or been clean shaven because that mustache. No.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, when it comes to the DCEU, who would you prefer to be the guiding ship, as it were, for this entire franchise? Would you rather it be Batman? Would you rather it be Superman?
Or are you happy
that it's going to be Wonder Woman?
I would definitely like it to be Wonder Woman, but I don't know that Warner Brothers is going to allow that to happen.
I don't know. I think the next couple of trailers for Justice League are going to be very interesting to watch. They're going to be recutting the shit out of those now that Wonder Woman's such a hit.
I don't know that they're going to be able to change that much.
Just Tuesday, news came that Warner Brothers is paying for extensive, and I'm using finger quotes, extensive reshoots in Justice League.
No kidding.
Headed by none other than Joss Whedon. So expect Joss Whedon, who originally was going to be making a Wonder Woman movie not a decade ago, is now going to be directing Gal Gadot or Gadot as Wonder Woman in Justice League. And you better believe they're going to be amping up her presence just a little bit.
That kind of makes me excited.
Oh, I'm pumped. Now, so far as I don't give a one shit about Justice League, which is weird because it's a movie I've been wanting to see my entire life.
You do a little. Far deep down in your heart, you do.
They're going to have to deal with that elephant in the room, the death of Superman, eventually. And that's just not something I want to deal with. It's just not something I really give a shit about. What I do care about, however, is how DC Films as an entity moves forward. Because this was a movie that people really were waiting for. They were waiting for that Donner Superman moment where like we would have a good character that stood for something, that actually meant something to not just people, but the zeitgeist that surrounds these people. We live in dark times right now. We don't know where to go or who to look for in terms of heroes, and everyone's so damn cynical. And then along comes a woman from an island nobody's ever heard of, or could barely spell or pronounce, to show us exactly what it means to take a moment and care for somebody else, and actually go out of their way to care for as many people as humanly possible. What a novel concept.
Well, there's also something you just said, that she is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
This is an action film helmed by a female lead, directed by a woman, unfortunately not written by a woman. So that in itself is monumental. It did as well as it did.
Yeah.
So now all that bullshit about, which is untrue anyway, because God, Fury Road, hello.
Yeah.
All that bullshit about ladies not being able to open a big blockbuster film. Well, we'll see if this actually changes anything.
Well, one thing I'm going to be really interested in seeing is how they handle the sequel. They've already announced it's going to be happening in present, like contemporary times.
Kind of disappointing.
I don't know. They did it with Captain America. And again, the parallels to Captain America are there, but
if you're gonna
copy something, at least copy the best parts of the MCU. I mean, Winter Soldier is demonstrably the best Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, so who knows? Maybe Wonder Woman could get a Winter Soldier out of
but
this.
But the best thing about Winter Soldier was its callbacks to the first movie. Are they gonna be able to do that?
Let's talk about the story of Wonder Woman and how it kind of left us with nothing to work with in terms of sequels.
Yeah.
It's very
and left
much...
me with a goddamn broken heart. Well, I'm sorry. I'm so sad about Steve. I'm still sad about it.
MJ, I like Chris Pine just enough. He's not my favorite Kirk. He's not my favorite Chris. In general, not just actors, Chris, but like if you put like three Chris's that I know in town and then put Chris Pine there, he wouldn't be my favorite Chris in that regard.
Well, I like him a lot.
I like him too. But insofar as the movie is concerned, it is very self-contained. It does not need to be affected by, nor does it affect any DC films that we're aware of.
Except for the framing sequence, sure. That was inconsequential.
If nothing else, that framing sequence actually is the impetus to tell us that story when you were fought in World War
One. Right, exactly.
Diana, so,
but the one cool thing about that framing sequence, she works at the motherfucking Louvre.
I know, isn't that
Wonder
great?
Woman works at the Louvre!
I mean...
I audibly squealed when we saw that.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. One of the things I really appreciate is that it's not so beholden to the wider DC cinematic universe. And they've been saying this for eons that, you know, that we're not doing the Marvel thing where every movie you need to see each movie to truly appreciate what we're trying to do. You can watch them alone, but you get more out of it if you do. This movie, you did not need to see Dawn of Justice. You did not need to see Suicide Squad at all.
Yeah.
You didn't need to see Man of Steel at all. And I'm very grateful for that because as far as I'm concerned, those movies now no longer exist. The DC Cinematic Universe began in earnest with Wonder Woman. Because it's so self-contained, that meant certain characters that we really grew to like in this movie weren't long for this world, it seems.
And I feel like the reason that, especially my love for Chris Pine, Steve Trevor, is mostly because you experience him through Diana's eyes.
You do.
And you really feel it when he's got to put her in the water. When he's got to put that plant in the water.
Yeah.
Which he doesn't do. He blows it up.
When you move beyond those parallels, you start to see that it does have its own world. It has two worlds that it inhabits very, very well. The world of Themyscira, which was gorgeously
I wish there was more time spent
Holy
there.
Holy cow. Like, who knew they actually knew how to properly color grade a movie?
Yeah,
like,
right?
The colors were bursting. It was like the blues of the water and the sky were brilliant. And like the white walls of Themyscira.
Yeah, the architecture. Ah.
We saw it in IMAX 3D. I wanted to hold my finger out and like run my finger along the wall and see if like any chalk came off of it. That's how good it looked in 3D. And it gave the first battle sequence between, you know, the Germans versus the Amazons this musculature.
Well, just the fact that they spent so much time on Themyscira and made it so beautiful. It was, they're really investing in a way that they haven't previously in the other DCEU movies in actually having like this fantasy element, this magic element in the DC universe, which needs to be there. That's different about DC than Marvel is that it's more magical. I don't want to say it's silly, but there's just more fantastic.
In the DCU, in the comic books anyway, there is the presence of the Greek pantheon. Like, those gods do exist.
Yeah.
So do you think that these gods are going to start popping up more in the wider DC extended universe? Because you know Zack Snyder's into that shit. Like, he was dabbling in, like, you know, myth building and, like, the concepts of, like, modern myths and all that crap in Dawn of Justice. Like, it wasn't even funny.
Well,
so,
they made it seem like those gods are all dead.
Ares is alive.
Well, they made it seem like Ares might have survived, but that everybody else is dead. What would be cool is to have, like, the next one have a thing where she's, like, finding their reincarnated selves. And if
like
they
decide... Like the Azzarello Chang run?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that if they do that, they can use closer to those designs, because those are much... Probably just more palatable for a modern audience, because they're very... for stylized designs. Yeah. Like Hades is like a child with like these cool ass candles dripping down. I think there's
shades of American Gods with that. And American Gods is just, it stinks on ice. So I'm not too keen.
The
on
show
like,
might not be good, but the book is amazing.
Yes, yeah, sure.
But it's not, it would be very different. And there, mm-hmm. at least in the book, there aren't any Greek or Roman gods in it.
Well, let me ask you, as a Wonder Woman fan, how do you feel about how the film handles Diana's origin? Because she has a wackadoodle origin that works not great on a good day.
Like, I like her old school, that Hippolyta just sculpted her from clay, mm-hmm. and the gods breathed life into her.
Simplicity itself.
I like it. I can see not liking it because, like, oh, then she's kind of like just a golem. She's just a, mm-hmm. you know, animated clay. That can be kind of weird, but it's better than having Zeus, who's like the biggest rapist in the Greek pantheon, mm-hmm. be her dad. Why do we need to put a dude into her origin? Yeah. Why can't it just be that she happened to be born in this mm-hmm. island full of ladies, and that the other lady goddesses like Hera or Aphrodite or Athena, those were the ones that actually had a hand in her creation. Yeah. Like Hera was just like, here, Hippolyta.
Have my grace, well, because have all my wisdom.
All the Amazons are really supposed to be like Hera's army, mm-hmm. and they don't mention any of the Greek goddesses.
That's true.
They mention stupid Zeus.
But as far as the structure of the film itself goes, I think that it moves to at a really wonderful and very considerate pace for the first 45 minutes of the movie. And then once we get into London, that's when things start to get a little choppy. If its similarities to Donner's Superman movie are there, it's definitely the moment when, like, Superman's Kryptonian origin to a Smallville story, and then when he gets to Metropolis, that's when the energy picks up, but also that's when the plot starts coming into the movie, and that's when the movie falls off the rails. Same diff with Wonder Woman.
They definitely wanted to hurry it up. You can tell.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they walk in, and, oh, here's Eddie Candy. Oh, we're walking into the department store. Oh, now here's the scene of Diana hilariously mm-hmm. trying on clothes. You can tell yeah. that they were just like, okay, we gotta get to this now. make this snappy. Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't make any sense. Why is Edda waiting there? She doesn't know they're gonna be there.
Such a wonderful character, and she's hardly utilized. At all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really feel that there needed to be an additional 15 to 20 to maybe even an additional half hour to this movie. If there's an ultimate cut of this movie on the way, I'm getting it.
Well, Jenkins said that they didn't have any uncut scenes. This is what she wanted to make.
That's what Ayer said about Suicide Squad, and yet an ultimate director's edition came out anyway.
The main thing I'd want to see is just that little segment of the movie to have it make more sense.
Mm-hmm. So what beats in the story didn't work for you necessarily? Because I can tell you a few that didn't work for me. And his name is David Enthulis.
I know, you said you didn't like him, and I thought he was fine.
I thought he was fine too, but like, there's something that smacks of like the Harry Potter.
Because he was in Harry Potter.
No, not just that though, but like the villain bait and switch. Like, so you have a character that's as gorgeously conceptualized as Dr. Poison in this movie. And the actor that got to play Dr. Poison was brilliant. She conveyed all the pathos.
No, she was really great. She was amazing. And I'm sad we didn't see more of her.
Right. And she had a share of screen time. I love Danny Houston, but he didn't need to be in this movie at all. It could have been Dr. Poison working in tandem while David Thewlis Ares is whispering, you know, sweet evils into her ear, and because that's what he does in the movie.
Yeah.
We just never see him do it because the movie's too busy. Like, it's probably Danny Houston. Maybe not.
See, but the thing with that whole like twist is mm-hmm. that it was not a twist.
It wasn't.
Maybe
at all.
It was just me. I saw that coming like as yeah. soon as they introduced
it. But that's because it was poorly structured in that regard. Like,
just little bits in the script like that, and also the whole thing where the sword was supposedly the god killer. No, it's really you, Diana.
I really enjoyed that bit.
But I saw that coming as soon as mm-hmm. they said it. It's like, it's not going to be the sword. Look at how they're saying, look at the look in their eyes when they're saying that. It's Diana. She is the god killer.
This is the part where I really feel the battle between Ares and Diana needed to go back to Themyscira. He needed to use some sort of like wizard magic. Oh, wait, I forgot. God magic. And like transport her back there and have Hippolyta show up and like have her and Diana have that moment where, yeah, I'm sorry, kiddo. I've been lying to you your entire life, but I had a reason for it, and now let's kill this son of a bitch because he's really bad for business. Like, that needed to happen.
I was waiting for some sort of mention or thought or flashback or something.
Anything
to do with Themyscira.
Yeah, it needed that like book ending, that connective tissue to like really bring home those like ideas and concepts, but it didn't. It just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So like, instead, what we have is a really poorly rendered battle sequence between CGI David Thewlis, which I can't believe I'm even saying that out loud. That's weird on its own. Versus Gal Gadot, who goes semi-Super Saiyan at one point, and then the movie's like CGI doesn't really follow through on that concept. We just have Gal Gadot, who has trouble emoting. And when she's like going wild-eyed and like apeshit, this is when the movie loses its sense of geography. I had no idea where everyone was placed in this like landing field with belts placed. So when she's going crazy, I didn't feel that anyone was really in danger. She was just like flipping concrete around. Nothing about the ending really hurt until the Steve thing. And I didn't want Steve to die. I like him a lot as a character. I didn't want to see a sequence in the sequel where like he's like Peggy Carter and he's got Alzheimer's or anything like that. But it would have been nice to have like a happier ending. Instead, she has to suffer and suffer greatly emotionally, and then she has to suffer like failure.
I always dislike that a lot of people seem to think that a superhero, they have to have a reason to fight. They have to have some tragedy in their past. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of comic writers who feel the need to rejigger origins to have that in there nowadays, and I really wish that wasn't there. I really wish that her and Steve could have had some time together. It makes me really sad.
I think that we're trending that way. I really do believe that. I think that eventually we're gonna get a superhero movie, and it'll probably be Joss Whedon's Batgirl movie. You never know, where we a genuinely happy ending with no like lingering threads to some darker stakes, higher sequel.
I don't know that I trust Joss Whedon not to do that, though.
Well, what do you think, that Marvel got their hooks into him too deeply? He got the hell out of there as soon as he could.
I know, but Joss does some silly things, and he doesn't.
He does.
He does. He's not the perfect feminist dude that a lot of people think that he is.
Well,
he does some problematic things. I just hope to God it's not some kind of Killing Joke movie, because I would.
I don't think he'd do that. I really, really don't believe that would happen.
Not.
I mean, one, you'd have to include Jared Leto in it because he's contracted to be the Joker in God knows how many movies, and that's just not fucking happening.
Hey, I'm just saying what I hope doesn't happen. I don't want to flesh out my fears anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're already going a little over long, but I would ask you, we already have your review, but how do you feel now that you've had time to marinate on it? Where does Wonder Woman sit in the overall pastiche of superhero films, past and present?
My affection for the character makes me a little less than objective. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's fine.
Yeah,
I want a total fan answer. I don't want like some analytical, like, because that's what the reviews are for. Where do you feel this thing stands?
I mean, I find it to be on the same par as, like I said, Captain America: The First Avenger or the first Thor movie, mm-hmm. both of which I enjoyed immensely. Like, they're super rewatchable. And I think the reason why so many people are saying that Wonder Woman is like, this is the first like Marvel-y DC movie, mm-hmm. it's because it has heart.
It's fun.
And there hasn't been a DC movie that has heart since what? Like Superman 2?
For me, Wonder Woman sits with the Donner Superman movie. Both of them have their flaws.
There's a lot of pacing issues in Superman 1.
There are a lot of pacing issues in Wonder Woman 2.
But it doesn't go on.
I know. It's nowhere near as long as the Superman movie, that's for sure. Last question. Favorite character of the movie? That's not Wonder Woman.
I don't know. There are so many good...
Antiope, for me.
I was just going to say Antiope is amazing.
That's one character that didn't need to die.
Yeah. But the one thing that was cool in when she fell, a nameless other Amazon, like, cried out and ran over to her side. So, like, as much as they were like, oh, well, we're not going to address the fact that these are all ladies on this island and they're probably gay.
They're jettisoning the sapphic subtext.
Yeah, yeah. There were two points at which they kind of sort of hinted at it. That was one, and the other one was when she and Steve were on that boat and she was saying how that series mm-hmm. of books proves that men are not essential for pleasure. Like, Antiope, Hippolyta was really great.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved Connie Nielsen for a long time. I think she did amazingly in that part.
I think that everyone tried to model their accent after Gal Gadot's
I think they did. I think that was really peculiar
decision.
I loved Chris Pine as Steve Trevor. Mm-hmm. I really, really did. Lucy Davis as Etta Candy was so amazing.
Yeah,
and
she was.
So sad we don't get to see more of her now. And Steve both.
Obviously, we can keep going on and on at length about this movie, but we do have business to attend to, and that is to share our top five most anticipated issues of the week. And this week, I'm going to have you kick us off, MJ. What's your first issue this week?
My first issue this week is from Boom. It is The Unsound, number one. Written by Cullen Bunn with art by Jack T. Cole. And it is a new creator-owned series from Cullen Bunn.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This one is a really spooky-looking horror book. He excels at the horror.
Sure.
Taking place in an insane asylum.
Great.
Where a new nurse coming in seems to have some crazy shit start to happen. It looks really cool, really spooky. I'm excited. What is your first issue of the week, Jared?
Well, for me, I also picked a spooky one because I'm excited by the creative team, Mr. Donnie Cates, Gary Brown, Mark Englert, and of course our pal Taylor Esposito for Baby Teeth, number one from Aftershock Comics. I don't know anything about this title. I haven't read anything about it. I tend to, when I get excited about a creative team, just read the book as it arrives, and Aftershock puts out a good spread, as I've often said on this podcast, and I believe that will be the case with this one. Baby Teeth, number one. MJ, what's next for you?
I've got a Giant Days number 27, another Boom pick. Written by John Allison, with pencils by Max Sarin, and inks by Liz Fleming, and colors by Whitney Koger. Giant Days is one of my favorite ongoings. And it's funny, I just looked at the number on here. It's already up to issue 27.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so exciting it's been going this long. It is one of the funniest books that I have on my pull list.
Yeah,
I constantly
chuckle.
Giggle. And you're always like, what are you laughing at?
I'm going to read it.
Giant Days.
I'm definitely intrigued. Stefania got to interview the creative team last week. We ran an exclusive preview courtesy of Boom. Thanks, Boom. And I was flipping through the pages. And because you're always cackling when you read that
it's
book,
so funny.
I have to read this thing now. I got to flip through the last issue. And I definitely chuckled myself at a couple points. So yeah, I'm on it. Giant Days is entering my life. No problem.
I'm excited that you're stoked for reading it. But yeah, Giant Days number 27, I am rather excited about. What's your next issue for this week, Jared?
All right, my next issue is, of course, Superman number 24. Creative team, you already know, Tomasi, Gleason, we got Monkey and Gray this time around. This is the next chapter in the Black Dawn saga. Black Dawn's not exactly been lighting my world on fire, but I'm always pleased that a new Superman entry is coming out. The big reason why I'm choosing this issue is because it's reintroducing the character Manchester Black, which was probably one of the more interesting Superman, I don't want to say villains, because he's more of an anti-hero, but like one of the more interesting anti-Superman type characters that got introduced in the early aughties.
Okay.
So I believe
he's got a good name.
Oh, he's just a good character. He's vicious. He's foul mouthed. He's like John Constantine went totally full blown cad. You get Manchester Black. So his presence in the book alone is enough to bring me along. Superman number 24 is my next book this week. MJ, what's next for you?
Well, mine is another mainstay in my particular stable. Mm-hmm. Paper Girls number 15 from Image, written by Brian K. Vaughan, art by Cliff Chang, colors by Matt Wilson, letters by Jared Fletcher. This is such a good goddamn comic.
Yeah.
This is the end of the third story arc, which is exciting because that means the third collection will be out in about a month or two. And this has been an awesome storyline. They traveled back in time to like prehistoric days and
easy
all this stuff.
Easy on those spoilers. I'm not kinda...
No, this is not spoilers.
All right.
And I am just so excited to see how this one ends. I kind of flipped through it and kind of spoiled myself a tiny bit. But I'm really excited to read it. It's such an amazing series. If you're not reading Paper Girls, God, what are you doing? Go read it. What's your next book, Jared?
Well, for me, we're jumping over to Dynamite for Magnus number one. I think it's really interesting that Diamond's doing something with these old Gold Key characters. I mean, somebody has to. And because Dynamite doesn't have its own established superhero universe, why not dabble in this one? I mean, like, they can expand it any way they like. And, of course, Magnus was probably one of those Valiant characters that got broomed when they did that whole restructuring bit about some odd years ago.
I don't think they wanted to get rid of Magnus.
Yeah.
I think the rights left them for some reason.
Magnus Robot Fighter is just a cool character. It's a cool name, cool concept. And we haven't seen him around in quite some time, so I am very interested to read Magnus number one. It certainly helps that we have Kyle Higgins doing the story. We got a backup story by Chuck Wendig, who's doing Turok, the dinosaur hunter, which is equally cool. We got Jorge Fornes doing the main Magnus story. I would love to see what he could do with this kind of material. Magnus number one is my next pick for this week. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is from the new publisher Vault Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Heathen number four.
You like in Vault?
Oh, yes. I love Heathen. The book itself has like this beautiful thick cover, and just like the presentation that this publisher has been doing for all of its books, A plus.
Well, it's got to be pricey.
Yeah. No, it's just like $3.99.
No, I'm talking
price.
About them.
Oh, yes. Their costs, probably, yes. Yeah. But their book is beautiful. It's Heathen Number 4, written and art by Natasha Alterici and letters by Rachel Deering. Hmm. It's about this Viking lesbian lady named Adis. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal book. And the fact that Natasha Alterici is both writing and drawing it, it has this cohesiveness that you don't necessarily always see in comics, and it is so much fun. There's a lot of Norse myth that gets thrown in there. Mm. I love the hell out of this book. I want everybody to be reading it. What's your next book, Jared?
Well, for me, this is a project that I've been very excited for, primarily because I'm absolutely in love with the creative team, Alexis Zaret, Fabian Rangel Jr., and of course we have Evelyn Rangel, collaborating on a book called Tarantula from Ad House Books. This is a hardcover that came out this week, and it is gorgeously put together. So if you're a big fan of space writers like me, this is a book you definitely need to be checking out. I've got it in my hands right now, and it's personalized by Mr. Alexis Zaret. He says, gracias, Jared. So thank you very much, Mr. Zaret.
Someone nice must have gotten that at TCAF.
Yeah, I can't imagine who that must have been. But yes, Tarantula, hardcover. Pick it up. $15 well spent. It's in my hands. It should be in yours. MJ, what's your last pick this week?
All right. My last pick is a young animal / DC pick. Mm-hmm. Shade the Change Girl number 9, written by Cecil Castellucci, illustrated by Marley Zarcone, with inks on some of the pages by Andy Parks, colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick, letters by Saida Timofonte. This is tied for my favorite young animal book. It is so great. Mm-hmm. And I can't ignore the fact that it is almost completely made up of ladies on the whole creative team. Makes me so happy. They're definitely knocking it out of the park with this book. It is one of my favorite series. Mm-hmm. And it's trippy and heartfelt and harsh at times, just like teenage years are.
It feels like a proper Vertigo book.
It does. It really does. Definitely. I mean, you can feel the influence from the older Shade series.
Yeah.
It's so good. Another one that if you're not reading that book, pick it up.
Definitely.
All right, what's your last book this week, Jared?
Well, for me, this is also the book I will be reviewing, Batman number 24.
Yeah?
So instead of just jabbering about it, let's just get right to it.
Batman number 24. What's your elevator pitch for, Jared?
Well, the button has come and gone, and the war of jokes and riddles is right around the corner. So I think we could all use a breather issue, and Batman number 24 happily obliges and even offers a potentially earth-shattering development for Bruce Wayne in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, why did you decide to read this book?
Honestly, because I knew something big was about to take place, because I'm also such a mark for DC.
You are. You really are.
I really am.
Well, what did you love about it?
It features a guest spot by none other than Mr. Clay Mann, and he ought to be a regular Bat artist, in my humble opinion. I loved his stuff on Trinity, and his Action Comics covers were all aces. He's got this grit and attention to realism that's a snug fit for a self-serious book like Batman. His fill-in pages, which have bright, optimistic colors by Jordi Belair, because those sequences take place during the day, mm-hmm. Were a nice visual break from David Finch's anatomically all-over-the-place pages and panels. Belair handles the colors throughout the issue, and her balance between day and night create this nice contrast for what Tom King is attempting to convey in this issue. The events of Batman number 24 take place in a fractured narrative because, of course, they do. King just has to be fancy. And Belair's contributions keep the reader oriented as to where we are. Through the visuals, we're provided a better sense of pacing than the actual story itself.
Well, on that note, was there anything you didn't like?
You and I have talked about this more times than I care to count, but Tom King's dialogue drives me right up the wall sometimes. I know you don't. But he gives these characters this naturalistic chatter that often contrasts with the rather severe superheroics that are depicted in his Batman stories. There's a Bendisian flair, if you know what I mean, that's almost as try-hard and distracting as anything Bendis actually does these days. I'm talking about these days, not Halcyon Bendis days either. And here, Batman has this issue-long conversation with Gotham Girl, of all people, about the nature of contentment and purpose that leads towards the issue's big, earth-shattering reveal. The only problem is, there's nothing especially revealing in these pages, though the book's moments are treated as though they were. There's nothing particularly revealing about Batman admitting he's not happy, and King's flourish, which is that he's also scared, is also obvious enough for anyone who's been reading Batman for any particular length of time. I'm not sure why Gotham Girl remains a fixture on the book. She's not an exceptionally well-conceptualized character, and she rarely, if ever, pops up in other Batman books. It feels like yet another personal stamp from Tom King, and like most of King's other personal touches, it distracts from the overall thrust of his narratives. And also, and this is something that's really bugging me, because the button was touted as like this huge earth-shattering event, and I've yet to see any real fallout from it. In this issue, if Batman felt a serious shift in his priorities after the events of the button, it isn't made clear in this issue. He refers at one moment to what he's seen, and he refers to some unnamed person, but he just says him. I don't know what he's talking about, and Gotham Girl certainly wouldn't, so we're left in the dark. Also, and this is going into spoiler territory here, but isn't it convenient that Bruce and Selina's engagement is about to be shelved for 8 issues so King can write his Joker versus Riddler story? And isn't it also convenient that the reveal was spoiled the night before the book's release? They dropped this big matzo ball in our laps, now we're left to clean up, run to the dry cleaners, and reflect on our feelings about the whole damn thing for 2 months until this story is allowed to continue. And I said earlier that I'm such a mark for DC, because I am, but I prefer it not to be so damn obvious that I'm being baited.
Well, who would you recommend this book to and why?
It's Batman. I don't have to recommend it to anybody. They're going to be buying this sucker up, but quick. And spoilers, this is going to be a huge collector's item before long.
Well, what's your score for Batman number 24?
I give Batman number 24 a begrudging 6.5 out of 10. All right, MJ, what do you got for us this week?
Well, I'm reviewing Doctor Strange number 20.
Wow, Doctor Strange number 20. Well, please, give us the elevator pitch.
All right. This is the final issue of Jason Aaron and Chris Bukalo's excellent run on Doctor Strange. Mm. Pardon my weeping.
That's okay. Oh, why did you decide to read this book?
Well, when this Doctor Strange series was first announced, previous to the Cumberbatch-fronted film's release, I was over the moon about it. Mm-hmm. Any Jason Aaron penned comics automatically get my anticipation revving. But a character who'd been long overdue for an ongoing series, written and drawn by the creative team who brought us the wacky, action-packed, and heartfelt Wolverine and the X-Men, was music to my ears. And the entire series has been exactly that. All the way up to this issue number 20, their finale on the series. Sniffle.
I'm sorry. Well, what did you love about this?
Well, the meat of the ongoing story arcs ended in issue 19, so this issue had the feel of an epilogue. And endings, true endings, you don't come by very often in superhero comics. Mm-hmm. And this one felt satisfying and bittersweet. And two characters even have brand new status quos by the final page. Oh. There is a brief sojourn to Weird World in the issue's center 10 pages, which is also a mini that Jason Aaron wrote a couple years ago during Secret Wars. Hmm. He likes to revisit past properties, which I love.
Well, good for him.
Mm-hmm. But it's hilariously described in this issue as part Renfest on crack, part post-apocalyptic game preserve. Nice one there, Mr. Aaron. And it's illustrated by the incomparable Kevin Nolan for those 10 pages.
Yeah.
The covers and little portions of issues that Nolan has drawn in Doctor Strange have been highlights of the series and have me itching to see more interiors from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, was there anything you didn't like?
The only thing that bothered me, and this is, quite honestly, a minuscule nitpick.
Okay.
Was that the following issue, number 21, mm-hmm. Dennis Hopeless and Nico Henricon's debut issue, came out last week. You heard that right. I'm not sure if issue number 21's nature as a Secret Empire tie-in caused the bump up, or if one of the artists on issue number 20 caused its delay, but I certainly wasn't about to read the 21st issue before the 20th.
Yeah, that's just a weird decision.
Yes. And also, and this goes without saying, I don't like this is the last Aaron Bukalo issue.
Yeah.
Harumph.
That's bad.
And also, one more thing. I'm sad that Mr. Misery, which is one of this series' best new creations, and it's a very unique and creepy as fuck character, mm-hmm. he didn't have one last farewell appearance in this issue. He was in the last one, but not this one. But I certainly hope we haven't seen the last of him in the Marvel U. And with Jason Aaron's penchant for reusing past Marvel creations in his other books, I'm sure we haven't.
I'm sure. Who would you recommend this book to and why?
I would recommend the series to any superhero fan who likes their comics with a healthy dose of the mystical, the horrific, and, well, the strange. Mm-mm. It's been a phenomenal ride, and I am truly sad to see these creators leave this book.
And what would you give Doctor Strange number 20?
Giving it a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. Every other week, we take to social media to ask you, our listeners, the pressing questions on our minds. This week's question, What would you like to see in the next solo Wonder Woman movie? We asked and you answered. MJ, what's doing over on Twitter?
Well, our friend Katie Schenkel, who is at Just Plain Tweets, said Lucy Davis back, either as Etta or Etta's great-great-granddaughter in modern times, also named Etta. Which, A, if they can do that in the Marvel Universe and have Steve Dayton, Peggy's niece, they can bring Etta back just to be Diana's bud.
Just to be a bud. Well, Logan Dalton over on Facebook said, Cheetah, and make it gayer.
I got a lot of replies about Cheetah as well. Grace Crowley mentioned seeing Cheetah. At Goats of Doom mentioned seeing Cheetah as well. Mm-hmm. That, especially because of Greg Rucka's and Liam Sharp's recent storyline featuring her, that seems to be a very popular character in everyone's minds.
Well, on Facebook, Jordan Gibson said, Wonder Woman and the JSA set in the 40s.
Oh my God, I would die.
Then he followed up with, then Wonder Woman in the 70s.
That would be also awesome. Elijah D. Prophet, or SJ Doublemint on Twitter, said a modern city turned into a labyrinth full of mythical monsters, or Diana completing an analog of the labors of Hercules, or Invisible Jet. I'm hoping we see the Invisible Jet one of these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stefania Rudd, our very own contributing writer, said, more Etta. It's set in the current times when she was cryogenically frozen and she gets to be sassy in our modern times.
On my Facebook page, Caitlin Roseberg replied and said, Diana smooching Barda. And our friend Christina Steen Stewart also said, Barda, and like tons of Furies, which would be great if they ever got around to doing the Hikatea as a movie, which would be able to bring in Batman and all that stuff.
Definitely could, yeah. Maybe that will be the sequel.
All the Furies could come in there and tear some shit up. It'd be pretty great.
Well, what would you like to see in the next sequel?
I would also like to see Cheetah, but only if they really, really establish Diana's and Barbara Ann's friendship. Mm-hmm. Because that sisterhood, the female friendship, like they show it a little bit in Themyscira, but not enough. Mm-hmm. And they really don't establish Etta and Diana as good of friends as I would like to see.
I see.
But they need to do that if they're going to have Cheetah in there, because you need to really feel it when Cheetah goes bad. Yeah. Or I also really want to see Cersei, because she'd be great. And not Cersei like Game of Thrones, Cersei like the Greek witch
god. I think our listeners understand the difference.
Just making sure. I'm just making sure.
And that's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 31-episode archive over on iTunes. Rate and subscribe and tell us how we're doing. Or search Casual Wednesdays over on DoomRocket.com. And look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
@MollyJane_K.
Thank you, MJ.
You're welcome.
And that's it. So until we get that moment when Gal Gadot punches Darkseid in the face, I remain Jared, that's MJ, and from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a wonderful new comic book day.